Welcome. We'll call the meeting of the House Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Finance Committee to order, and the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Jensen.
Here.
Representative Welty. Representative Finstad. Representative Doty.
Here.
Representative Faust.
Here.
Representative Hamilton. Representative Hansen. Representative Heigerken. Representative Magnus.
Here.
Representative Olin.
Here.
Representative Otremba. Representative Peterson. Representative Poppy. Representative Schmansky.
Here.
It's a good day when the vice chair and the lead Republican are here on time. So, members, you have minutes in your file folder from February 20th, and the lead Republican, Representative Finstad, moves approval of those minutes. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are adopted. Today, members, we're looking at a number of tax bills, and we're also going to review, particularly for newer members, but I think for older members, too, like me, we have sales tax exemptions for production agriculture, basically, in this state, and I think it's always good and healthy for the Ag Committee to understand what's included in that list now, what's not included, why it's not included, what maybe should be included, what's the basis of it, et cetera, et cetera. So we have an expert in that field sitting before us to give us a short presentation, and then after we're done with a little background, then we'll move into the three bills, members. So, Ms. Dalton, welcome to the committee, and introduce yourself for the tape and proceed as you see fit.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Pat Dalton with House Research, and normally people see me doing sales taxes in the tax committee. I understand that the chair actually likes visuals, but what I didn't know is that the chair likes visuals of pictures. I did try to draw a tractor.
Oh, very good. Very, very nice. You'll be invited back now.
Members, you do actually have a copy of the slides that I'm going to be going through in your packet, I believe. So you can follow through with me. The first question I was really asked to address is why do we have exemptions for agricultural inputs for the sales tax, and what's the policy behind it? The sales tax is supposed to be a tax on final consumption. Unfortunately, in this state, like it is in most states, that's not always the case. About 40% of the sales tax is actually paid by businesses, including ag. However, the state has actually taken the policy position over the last 15, 20 years to try to exempt inputs to production. One of the reasons you don't want to tax inputs to production, including agricultural inputs, is because it leads to tax pyramiding. When a tax is paid by the producer of the goods, they build that tax into the price that they pay. So that gets passed through the system. So, for instance, we always talk about the fact that we have a tax exemption for food sold to for home consumption. Well, that's true, except that the tax paid by farmers gets built into the cost of the food, the tax paid by the ag processors gets built into the food, and so eventually that tax is indirectly paid ultimately by the consumers when they go to the grocery store. The third reason that, the policy reason not to tax agricultural inputs is that it does put Minnesota farmers at a competitive disadvantage with farmers in other states that don't tax agricultural inputs. Minnesota has a history of generally trying to exempt ag inputs from tax. When the tax was imposed in 1967, inputs to production, including inputs to ag production, were exempt from the sales tax, and those inputs are the things that get used up, the seeds, the fertilizer, things like that. In 1981, there was a law imposed to change to allow farm machinery to have a lower rate than the general sales tax. In 1981, we raised the general sales tax from 4% to 5%, but we explicitly left farm machinery at 4%. In 1985, the rate on farm machinery was reduced to 2%, and we totally exempted repair and replacement parts of farm machinery. Finally, in 1988, the legislature enacted a phase-out of tax on farm machinery to zero by June 30th, 2000. So it sounds like we don't tax much on ag inputs, but there are still things that we do tax. As I said, there are three major sales tax exemptions for agriculture. They're all in Section 297.869 of the sales tax law, and they include materials consumed in agricultural production, repair and replacement parts, machinery, equipment, and some fencing. Most of the changes that have occurred in the last few years have related to how we define two of those things, how we define agricultural production and how we define exempt machinery.
And members, we're getting a list of all the current rules and laws that I had you all read, and I know you all read it and memorized it, but fortunately it didn't make it in our packets, and we're going to get it copied and get it out to you so you can look at the current exemptions also.
The definition of agricultural production, which I really like, is it's very extensive. Horticulture, silviculture, floriculture, maple syrup harvesting, raising pests, livestock, poultry, dairy and poultry products, which is our nice way of saying milk and eggs, bees and apiary products, raising and harvesting agricultural crops. You would think that would be up further in the list. Raising sod, fur-bearing animals, research animals, and horses. One of the more recent expansions is our expansion of the definition of livestock. One of the things I worked on in the 90s was adding to the definition of livestock that qualifies for ag production ratitae, cervidae, and llamas, which are the cervidae are the deer, moose, and elk. The ratitae are the ostriches, emus, and rheas, and the llamas are the llamas and alpacas. And it was always hard to not have a really good name for llamas other than llama.
Could you draw us a picture of a llama up there?
No, Mr. Chair, I won't draw you a picture of a llama. Materials used in agricultural production. These are the inputs to production. These are feed, trees, fertilizers, herbicides. One of the expansions in the 90s was to veterinarian materials used for the care of production animals, chemicals for cleaning food processing equipment, chemicals and items used to treat agricultural waste, electricity and fuel for heating, cooling, and light above normal levels, which has been kind of a concern because, your average just heating of your barn isn't fuel for that is not exempt, but if you have to like run your little heater for your chicks to keep them alive, that is allowed. That's a place that has some real line drawing. Petroleum products and lubricants and tools and equipment that have less than a 12-month useful life.
Representative Heigerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just want to, and I realize, Ms. Dalton, that Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. But anyway,
for pointing that out.
Is that going to cost me? I realize you can't answer this, but I know that that's going to come up later in the clarification with the department. But like barbed wire fence is not exempt. I know fencing for cervidae and everything else is, but within the fencing for livestock is not. Has that ever been brought up before, or where did that fall through the cracks?
Ms. Dole.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heigerken, fencing was generally never included in the exemption, and when cervidae was added to the definition of livestock, the cervidae people basically came in and said, we have really unusually expensive fencing, because I guess they have to use like 12-foot high fences to contain these. And it was really an issue with the Department of Natural Resources because they didn't want these animals escaping. And so a special exemption was done for them. Repair and replacement parts. Repair and replacement parts on farm machinery are defined as anything that replaces a part that has a manufacturer-assigned part number. And the definition of repair and replacement parts explicitly excludes tires. The very first question I got when I started doing sales tax law in 1991 was, how do we tax lug nuts? At that time, farm machinery was taxed at 2%, tires were taxed at 6%, and repair and replacement parts were zero. And they said, how do we tax lug nuts? And I said, I have no idea. I will get back to you. They actually did have a part number, and so they were exempt under this provision. But that was one of my first exposures to this whole, you know, what is taxable and what is not taxable in ag. And then finally, the definition of machinery, equipment, and fencing. This is one of the big exemptions. It exempts. This is where the exemption for farm machinery is, although the definition is in a slightly different place. As I said, fencing is only for the farm survey, because the DNR really was very concerned about these domesticated animals getting in and mixing with the native population. And then generator units for operating farm machinery and providing light and space heat necessary for production of livestock, dairy animals, poultry, and dairy and poultry products. And this part of this definition is a little bit in conflict with the inputs to production exemption, which I said covered fuels for heating and lighting, but only if it exceeds kind of standard levels. And so the department is actually right now in the process of doing a revenue notice that may let this supersede the language that's in the inputs to production. So there is some controversy over which language actually supersedes the other. Is it really anything that's necessary for the production, or is it anything necessary for the production that exceeds normal levels of lighting and heating? Farm machinery. Farm machinery includes machinery for growing ag crops, barn cleaners, milking systems, grain dryers, feeding systems. And one of the things that's interesting about the things that are in that laundry list is that they are exempt regardless of whether just purchased and installed by the farmer or whether installed by a contractor. And this is really important because normally if a contractor installs these things, these become improvements to real property. And under normal sales tax law, if you do an improvement to real property, the contractor has to pay the sales tax on the materials that they use to make that improvement, and this exemption actually allows the contractor not to pay the sales tax on these items as well.
Representative Finstead is first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I should have stopped the screen earlier, but the exceeds normal level. Who establishes normal level?
Mr. Chair, Representative Finstead, that would be the department. That would be one of their administrative rulemakings.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chair, you're not comparing apples to apples. My farm, the normal level on my farm for heating my barn, I mean, there's so many things to take into consideration. They just use a statewide average and say, well, a barn of this many square feet would be approximately this, or...
Mr. Chair, Representative Finstead, I hate to speak for the department, and I don't know if anyone from the department is here. My understanding is like there is a certain range, you know, as long as you're heating your barn to no more than, you know, 70 degrees or cooling it to no less than, you know, 80 degrees, something, you know, within kind of normal range that you would use actually for your home or your office or something like that. That's what they consider to be normal levels. And it's only if you have to provide, you know, additional heat, like for big, and I have to admit, I know very little about farming. My father was a farmer, but he was not a farmer by the time I was born.
And where did you go to high school, Ms. Dalton?
I went to high school in Anoka, Mr. Chair.
Anoka. Okay, thank you. Representative Finstead?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And this might be something that maybe this committee could look at a little bit because, you know, not that we're heating the barns left and right, but you take a look at some of the swine facilities, some of the shops, on-farm shops that, you know, are heated now to keep the maintenance and keep the machineries the machines running, I guess it would be something that maybe we should put a little more clarification in. It scares me a little bit that the department is saying, doing a statewide, I guess, average or whatever when it comes to what acceptable levels are and what exceeds normal levels. It would be something maybe better that this committee could handle.
Representative Finstead, we'll ask our committee administrator to get a statement from the Department of Revenue on how they calculate normal use, and we'll put that in your folders. Representative Heigerken and then Magnus.
Okay. To that point, last year we had a committee member, Representative Junkie, you're part of it, some of the other members were, and I want to thank Mr. Greg Heck out of the Department of Revenue, who did give us some new interpretations. And then one of them, if you turn to your handout, says item number 12 is currently under review by the department. And that is referring to...
Representative Heiger, you're talking about this draft that you gave the...
These are some new rules, Mr. Chair, some new rule interpretations that we worked on. The Farmers Union was involved very much this summer. We had a series of meetings. We had a machinery lobbyist, among others, that were involved in discussions. So we've had a good number of meetings, and this is what we came up with, and there are some new rulings that came up. But referring to Representative Finstead's comments and yours, Ms. Dalton, number 12 there, electricity and fuels for heating, cooling, and ventilation. The law provides that fuels, electricity, gas, and steam used or consumed in the production process is exempt, except that electricity, gas, or steam used for space heating, cooling, or lighting is exempt if, and then there's an exception, if it is in excess of the average, which you referred to, Ms. Dalton, if it is in excess of the average climate control lighting for the production area, and two, it is necessary to produce the particular product. And then the last paragraph, this says, it provides that a purchase of fuel, electricity, or gas to power a machine or fixture that controls the lighting or climate of a building is taxable unless the lighting or climate control is a special requirement necessary to produce that particular agricultural product. And it sums up on the next page, the second paragraph. It is the department's position that the purchase of all fuel, gas, and electricity that is used to heat, cool, light, and ventilate facilities in which agriculture animals are housed is consumed and used directly in the agriculture production process and is therefore exempt from the sales tax. So thermal air quality control is necessary to maintain the health and prevent disease in agriculture production. So it does clarify a lot, but we still have, and I realize that the department, and I've talked to Mr. Heck a couple times since then, that these are still things that are being, you know, we've been going back and forth on this. So I think that gives you some clarification.
Ms. Dalton?
Chair, members of the committee, that's actually true. The department has proposed rules which have come over to the House for review. Mm-hmm. However, the first language you read is actually in the statute, and it probably would make sense, you know, if that is really where we're going. If not, if the department is willing to interpret it this way, you may want to let them interpret it this way this year and then maybe next year clean up the language to match it. If they do the interpretation first, you won't have to pay a cost in terms of revenue loss from changing the interpretation. Whereas if you change it prior to their interpretation being changed, there will probably be a revenue estimate to it.
Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just reviewing the handout we got here now,
members, the handout Representative Magnus is referring to is this
the long one.
Larger one. Page 2 actually shows the farm machinery that are exempt, and page 4 gives you a list of taxable items right now. It's kind of interesting to look through and think about. Representative Magnus.
Yeah, and it is helpful, Mr. Chairman. My question was relating to the slide Ms. Dalton has up there on generating units, and I was wondering about motor vehicles because, as I understand it, now that some of the environmentally friendly folks have kind of taken charge around here, what I understand it is that they're going to enact a anti-idling bill for or legislation for semi-trucks, and in order then to, if you're trucking, say you're doing what we're doing on the farm now, hauling grain into some of the facilities, and everybody else in the country seems to be doing it too. I know last week when it was 4, 5, 6 below, They were sitting there, yeah, they're 14 below one day, and they were sitting there in Mankato, for example, for 3 hours trying to wait in line to get their trucks unloaded. We're going to have to put generator units, it looks like, on these trucks now if the groups are successful in doing the anti-idling legislation here in Minnesota. And as I understand it from this handout, and that those, if you put them on a farm truck that you're hauling grain with, you're either going to freeze to death or pay the sales tax on the new generator you're putting in. It's going to cost between $8,000 and $10,000. So, just a point I think for our committee to watch when you're approached by some of these groups. They don't sit out on those trucks on a 10 below day waiting for 3 hours to get unloaded.
Representative Magnus, you keep an eye on those bills. If they move, maybe make a request to the chair to bring them down and take a look at
it. I sure will. I appreciate that, Mitch.
Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Chair, I'll pass. I just had a comment for Representative Finstead, but I'll pass.
Good enough. Ms. Dalton.
Going back to where I was, farm machinery includes machinery for growing crops. These items, regardless of whether they're installed by a contractor or not, and I believe that that's actually one of the areas where the whole grain bin issue has come into effect, which I think the members who are offering that tax can talk about it. And then irrigation systems. Things that are not included in farm machinery include repair and replacement parts, which have their own separate exemption, tools, shop equipment, grain bins, and they are explicitly excluded, fencing materials, communication equipment, and other farm supplies, motor vehicles subject to the motor vehicle sales tax. There are a couple of motor vehicles that are not subject to the motor vehicle sales tax. Some of the smaller farm wagons, some what are called slow-moving farm trucks that can't go above 30 miles an hour, tractors, even though they occasionally show up on the road, they are not taxed under the motor vehicle sales tax. However, snowmobiles, snowblowers, and lawnmowers, garden tractors, and garden tillers are all subject to sales tax. And machinery used to raise fur-bearing animals, research animals, and horses not for slaughter are not included in the exemption for farm machinery. This is an example of where we expanded the definition of ag production to include fur-bearing animals, research animals, and things like that. So their input to production, their food and bedding and things like that is exempt, but we do not give them the same exemption for their machinery.
Representative Hager.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But anyways, that has been, and I've had a number of meetings with the Department of Revenue. There, for example, irrigation, or even production agriculture, four-wheelers. Oftentimes, I mean, people that run an irrigation, that irrigate their crops, need a four-wheeler, go up, they're constantly repairing the irrigation systems and spraying the weeds and whatnot all. You almost need that to get in and about. But that is something that I think we may have to look at someplace down the line. Snow blowers, I mean, for God's sakes, I mean, you've got a load of milk, you got to get out, you got the milk truck coming in, and you need that snow blower in order to clear the roads, your driveways and everything else, and that's not tax exempt. But I mean, there's a lot of things that I've found that if it has a motor, it fences, it's tax exempt. If it doesn't, it's not. I mean, there's a lot of gray areas yet, I realize that. But with Representative Erdahl's bill coming up, I hope that we can address a couple of those things.
You're a member with a certificate. You can do anything you want, Representative Hager, or attempt to. Ms. Dalton, the grain bins that you mentioned, does it specify, obviously a large grain bin attached to a concrete slab is probably part of real estate, but there's smaller grain and feed bins that'll sit next to a hog production building or a poultry production building that literally are probably portable and movable. And frankly, as a in my other profession, I'm a real estate appraiser and do a lot of farm appraisals. I don't necessarily count those small bins as real estate. I count the big bins as real estate. Has the department specified a difference in the size of bin or the portability of the bins?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the grain bins are not exempt because they are explicitly excluded. They are listed as one of the items in the law, in the statute right now, as things that are not included. The advantage of being in the list, and of course I can't find the right slide now. The advantage of being in the list that says, you know, regardless of whether installed by the contractor, it doesn't matter whether it's installed by the contractor or not, and it doesn't matter whether it's an improvement to real property. It's saying those items are exempt, whether they are an improvement to real property or not an improvement to real property. However, right now, grain bins are not in that list.
Ms. Heiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How about, augers? Are they exempt or not? It's something that it's machinery used to get, obviously. Likewise with silage unloaders. Are they exempt? I'm sorry, I hate to do this to you.
Ms. Dalton, do you know what an auger is?
Mr. Chair, actually, I do know what an auger okay. is, and I know good. That people sometimes get their hands and arms caught in them.
That is true.
Really, really bad.
You see a lot of ag committee members in the past that were missing digits because of augers, but that's improved over the years.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, to the extent that augers and things like that are included in the systems that are listed here, they would be exempt. And I think one of the big issues has been, for instance, the department has suggested that instead of saying grain dryers, we say grain drying systems, which would then include, you know, things other than just the dryer itself. It would also include grain bins that are part of the whole system itself. So that's one suggestion for dealing with some of these. Some of these things need to be thought of as big systems as opposed to just individual items, and that might help deal with some of the
Do you know a name of a person at Revenue that specializes in these rulings in case we have questions? Who would you contact over there?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Heiger, and Greg Heck is the lawyer for the sales tax area, and he would be the person to contact about all of these issues.
Any other questions? Representative Szymanski.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, yes. Question I have regards sales tax on equipment sold at auction. In conversation with auctioneers, they're telling me there's a general confusion when, say, a skid loader is put on an auction, whether it is bought or sold by a farmer and or construction contractor, and when it is subject to sales tax and when it is not, and how do they know the difference?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's a really good question, because the farm exemptions apply to machinery and equipment used principally and directly in farm production. So if somebody is selling something at a farm auction and it is not clear that the person purchasing it will be using it in the farm, it is not clear. I'm not really sure exactly. I believe we have an isolated and occasional sales exemption for farm auctions. What will happen is if the person who makes the purchase should have paid sales tax and didn't, then they will be caught on, they could potentially be caught in an audit of their own business. But absent that, there's no way for us to tell whether it should be taxable or not.
Representative Szymanski.
Ms. Dalton, then in that situation, is the auctioneer the or the clerk exempt or relieved of the responsibility of collecting that tax or trying to recover it at a later date?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe that they are exempt. If it is a legitimate farm auction, I believe that they are exempt from collecting the sales tax on that. I would have to go back and make sure about that. It's been a while since I've looked at the isolated and occasional sales tax exemption. but my understanding is that, yes, they should be exempt from having to collect the tax, and they are not liable if the person who makes the purchase should be paying use tax.
Thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question's on the machinery for growing agricultural crops, and I looked at the revenue sheet. Talks about activities result in a product that will ultimately be sold at retail, and agriculture, cultivating soil, planting, raising, and harvesting crops. My questions regard to native grass, cedars, or planting equipment that is used for planting CRP or other crops for agricultural purposes, but they would not be sold for retail, at least not yet. And so I'm wondering if that is exempt, if those equipment, say, of native grass cedar is exempt.
And before you answer, Representative Hansen asked a good question, and Ms. Dalton, I don't know if you're aware or not, there is an amendment dealing with set-aside or CRP or other acreage, which hasn't been included now as ag production, but certainly is taxed in real estate terms as agriculture land. And so we have an amendment addressing that, so it's timely that you can maybe comment on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, no, machinery used for the CRP lands is not exempt under the ag production exemption. Having said that, and yes, there is an amendment, but we've had a further discussion of the amendment, and there will be a new drafting amendment that will clarify things a little better that Mr. Sullivan is working on right now and should have to the committee shortly.
Okay. Representative Heigerken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, that is an issue that has come up also up in Pope County, but I think it's being addressed now. But referring to Mr. Representative Shemansky's question, number nine deals with, and if you got that handout that we had of new rule clarification, and I think Ms. Bolton touched upon it briefly, and that kind of answers your question there. It says the isolated and occasional sales exemption applies to non-recurring sales made by individuals of personal items. The isolated and occasional sales exemption never applies to sales of inventory items that were purchased by a retailer for resale. So that addresses the other end of it, so that there's still some confusion.
Ms. Olin, did you have a question?
Yeah, my question, thank you, Chairman. My question directly relates to CRP, too, because I've gotten a lot of questions on moors up north that are being used for hay products and at the same time being used on CRP, and you're telling the people because they raise hay on different land, but they also have CRP, that that's not exempt, or that they don't, they have to pay tax on it.
Ms. Dalton, maybe you can comment on that. What about a split use farm machinery, like he said? He uses it to mow the ditches and bale the hay and mow the hay fields and bale the hay, but then he goes out to mow the thistle out of the CRP, which is required, and now the department says, whoa, wait a minute, you're not producing.
Mr. Chair, Representative, actually that is one of the more difficult line drawings that actually does occur in this area, because the law does require that the equipment be used principally for ag production. I believe the department defines principally as 51% or more. So it would kind of depend on how it's being used. But that's actually one of the reasons why there's issues with the ATVs and the snowmobiles and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Representative Olin.
Mr. Chair, yeah, that still leaves one question. Who's making determination as to what is ag production and not? Because I have an equipment dealer that got charged the entire works without asking any farmers or anybody what their use for is. If they sold them more, you paid the tax.
Ms. Dalton, I believe it's Mr. Heck. I don't. You have his phone number off the top of your head, or there is someone at the department, and I think it's always informative for a member to call someone over in the department and talk to them directly on some of this. It's sometimes an interesting conversation. Representative Heigerken.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and again, it goes beyond that, Representative Olin. The problem was created a couple years ago when we ran out of money. So the state and the governor, being among them, decided to hire a whole lot of auditors bring in more money into the state. I had 11 implement dealers audited, and I was to each and every one this summer, and I just got one going through it in St. Martin right now. So it's an issue not really created by Mr. Heck. I mean, he's been very, very cooperative. The department's been very cooperative. I want them to know that. But the other issue is we're in compliance with federal law, and we're dealing with production agriculture. CRP land is not production agriculture. I think that belongs in the Environment Committee and not in production agriculture. We're dealing with ag here. And I dealt with some people that are in CRP in Pope County. They had irrigators sitting out there, and they wanted sales tax exemption for the four-wheelers and everything else. And the argument I got, this is not production agriculture. So it's something that we may have to do on the federal level first, just to be careful here. But those are some of the issues that did come up. Thank you.
And I don't think we have federal jurisdiction members. But any other questions for Ms. Dalton? Thank you for your timely visit to the Agriculture Finance Committee. We appreciate it. Representative Erdahl. Representative Erdahl has bill number 158, members, and we do have a couple amendments, but before we do that, we'll let Representative Erdahl move his bill and discuss it a little bit, and then we'll go to some of the amendments we have laying here for it. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Would you like to move your bill?
I can't. I'm not on the committee.
Oh, you're not? Oh, you were just sitting around at the table. The chair... Representative Finstead moves House File 158, recommends it to pass, be referred to the Committee on Finance with a suggestion to go to taxes. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, the committee members. This bill, House File 158, expands the sales tax exemption to include bins, tires, fences, and construction materials for livestock containment. You all know the statistics. Minnesota has 79,000 farms, 28 million acres, 20% of our total economic activity, one in five jobs. So why do we need to do this bill? I think Ms. Dalton gives a pretty good explanation of what the sales tax entails as far as farming is concerned. I think that we do need to... try to achieve some more consistency in our sales tax and sales tax exemptions as they relate to agriculture. This bill, I think, moves us in that direction. I don't know if we'll ever become totally consistent because of the various questions that came up with this group. This bill, I think, would also help with competition as far as other states that have wider exemptions than we have at the present time. This will promote the expansion of agriculture and agriculture's value to our economy, aid younger and starting farmers, give a boost to struggling farmers. I have a neighbor across the road in Acton Township who is a young farmer, about 30 years old. He just did a addition to his family farm, his barn, put in a parlor, put in a freestall containment facility, and I asked him a couple days ago if he had not had to pay the sales tax on that, what he would have saved, and it would have been about $7,000 to $8,000. So it's a good savings to someone. The purpose of this is not to compete with the dairy credit. It's just to provide another option. I'd like to credit Representative Heidgerken with his work on this, and also with the former chair and Representative Abrams and current chair Representative Linchesky for their suggestion for this bill, because 2 years ago when I brought the tax credit to them, they suggested that we do something with these sales tax exemptions. And that's the genesis of of the process of this bill. So with that...
Representative Erdahl, would you go through the sections just a little bit? It's not that difficult. And tell us specifically what you're doing in your bill. What are you exempting and, you know...
Well, the changes occur on the second page, starting with line 2-8, basically getting into the fencing there, the containment facilities, including interior crates, partitions, grain bins for livestock, as defined in section 17A03. That's the definition of what livestock is. And then building materials used in construction of buildings and interior and exterior housing and containment facilities for livestock, once again, as defined in statute. Interior containment facilities, for example, would be for swine production, the fencing inside the barn. Effective for sales and purchases made after June 30th. 2007. I think I skipped over the part where tires are included. There's a I can't see where it is right now, but there's
219.
Oh, there it is. I'm sorry. 219, where except tires are crossed out. This would include tires. Obviously, a tractor tire, a truck tire, you know, is a pretty high expense, and it'd be good to include that in this. Fencing, 230, fencing used for containment here it just mentions farm survey, which I think, as Ms. Dalton was implying, are now included in the definition of livestock, and so by taking them out, that doesn't exclude them. It just is... repetitive because they are included in the definition of livestock.
And Representative Erdahl, so probably the major change in here that the tax committee will question, I would guess, members, and you can comment, is the building materials. That's a pretty major change to exempt building materials. And the fencing, if it's considered real estate now, and there is some fencing, members, I think you're aware, that might get sunk into concrete and really become kind of permanently real estate. And there's also then portable fencing that you put up, electric fencing and other things when you're moving cattle around and harvested cornfields and other things. And that may generate some discussion because those are some substantial changes. And I agree with them, by the way, and I'm sure most people here do. But I don't know if our tax friends will look at it that way or not. So it'll be interesting when you go over there.
It's always interesting when one goes to the tax committee, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Erdahl, you have an author's amendment?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I thought I did, but I understand that there's another revision of that.
Mr. Sullivan, do we have that new amendment? You have it? Mr. Sullivan, can you explain it to the committee? What's changed? We're talking about the A2 amendment right now, members. If you take that out of your file, 158A2, and we're going to change it and then call it the A3 amendment, I believe, is what you want to do. Could you explain the new A3 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The A3 amendment is really just a change in placement of the language in the A2. The same maintenance of land in state or federal agriculture programs, referring to the CRP land, that's moved out of Clause 1 and added as a new Paragraph B. So there's no confusion. In the beginning of Paragraph A, there's talk about principally in agricultural production. So there's some concern that maybe those two items would conflict. So we just took the maintenance of federal programs out and put it in its own Paragraph B.
Okay. Members follow that? And that we're going to call that the A3 amendment. So Representative Finstead moves the A3 amendment on behalf of the author. Any comments, Representative Erdahl, to your amendment?
No, I think that, once again, it was discussed to some extent with Ms. Dalton. It basically has been noted, affects CRP land.
Representative Hansen, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Erdahl. It's your intent and understanding that maintenance of land would include the planting of such land.
Yes.
Representative Olin.
And that would also take care of my mower situation I referred to a while ago, which I didn't have A3 in front of me.
Representative Ertl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Olin, the goal of the author is always to take care of the concerns of the members.
That's a yes. Representative Olin, Representative Szymanski.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Ertl, Representative Ertl, excuse me. Just looking at the A3 amendment here with the other farm supplies on line 121, going down to line 1.24, lawnmowers except those in use in the production of sod for sale or garden type tractors or garden tillers. Now, does that mean on the small farm, an organic production farm, that their equipment would be tax exempt then if they were using such garden tillers or garden tractors?
I believe that it would, Mr. Chairman. I believe that it would.
We have, Representative Szymanski, again, we haven't changed that. Farm machinery does not include those things, so that stays the same. It's not underlined or crossed out, so we have not changed that section. It's just printed here, so we can, we're adding actually a B, and I assume then that'll probably become a C section as you move down.
Right.
Is that right? You can change the B to a C, and that's incorporated in there also, members. Other questions to the amendment? If not, all those in favor of the Finstead amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment's adopted. There's another amendment, as soon as I find it. A1 amendment. I will offer the A1 amendment, members. And again, this just addresses some of the things... And I think clarifies some of the items that we talked about previously, where Ms. Dalton said that grain bins are specifically listed. This would basically take that specific listing out down on 1.22. We add some of those, instead of grain dryers, like she talked about, drying systems. So again, that would include the augers and the other things that are used in it. I think that's kind of self-explanatory, but we're adding that. If you go to the other side, you're also seeing calf hutches, cow mats, mattresses, syringes, and needles. Again, our dairy folks who are in the audience here for this bill and another bill have suggested that those are certainly used in production and they ought to be exempt also. And then there's some language probably from Representative Heigerkin's group there addressing the lighting and heating and cooling issues, again, trying to clarify that a little bit. Any questions to that amendment? Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chairman Junkie, and to the author, Representative Ertl. Just quickly, Minnesota Department of Revenue, the document, I was reviewing this, and this question came from a member who's in the audience who's concerned with this issue.
What number are you on in that document? Or what page? Or what?
I'm on the...
I guess number. So we can follow.
I think 10, tools and miscellaneous items. If you go to the next page following that, you'll see the department position. It says disposable syringes used on agricultural animals are exempt, but reusable syringes are taxable. But disposable needles used on those syringes would be exempt. So, Representative Ertl, I just want clarification that once yours goes into effect, that even the reusable syringes would be tax exempt.
And Representative Ertl, and of course that is the intent, and I'd ask our research to confirm that it's all syringes and needles. Here comes Ms. Dalton to maybe help us along a little bit with that too.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the way the A1 amendment was drafted, we did not specify whether they were disposable or reusable. We just said syringes and needles. That should cover everything.
Thank you, Mr. Holden.
Thank you. I just wanted to have that clarification and have that on record. Thank you very much.
Okay. Other questions? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Ertl, for our beef producers, if I were to build a monoslope building with a concrete feeding floor, would they be exempt?
Representative Ertl.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, I believe that they would. It's a good piece of legislation.
Members, to the junkie amendment. Any other questions on that specifically? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? An amendment's adopted. To the bill. Representative Magnus.
To Chairman, Representative Rudol, I was wondering if you would accept my suggestion to a friendly amendment to your bill and to change the effective dates in every section here to January 1 of 07.
Representative Rudol.
To keep us from going through the middle of the year,
Yes, I would.
Representative Magnus moves to change on line, page 2, line 2.17, change June 30th to January 1st.
Mr. Chairman.
And on line 2.24, Representative Erdahl, you don't like this now?
Ms. Dalton,
you want to weigh in before we, right in the middle of our amendment proposal here? Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I just want to point out that this is the way the law is, the bill is written, it's effective for sales made after June 30th. If you change it retroactively to January 1, 2007, you've got problems that people may have bought these things and then there are refund mechanisms and there is no refund mechanism in this bill.
Representative Magnus.
Mr. Chairman, I think this bill is probably going to taxes maybe between the time we get out of here and between we get to taxes. We can figure out some refund mechanism because the department's done this before.
So, Representative Magnus, you want to continue with the amendment? Yes?
All right.
So, members, 2.17 and then on 2.24 also change June 30th to January 1st. And on line 3.5, June 30th gets changed to January 1st. And, members, follow along here, research. I think we can do it since we've already added the amendments. Can we change those at the same time? Or does that have to be... On my amendment, there was a effective date also on line 2.4. So as that's part of the amendment, the A1 June 30th gets changed to January 1st. Is there anything on the other? And the A3 amendment that was adopted, line 2.2 goes from June 30th to January 1st. I think we have them all. Any discussion to that? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Amendments adopted to the bill. Any other comments to the bill? Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to comment on this bill, pro or con? Now's your chance. Seeing none, Representative Finstead renews his motion that House File 158 be recommended to pass, move to the Committee on Finance with recommendation to go to taxes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Bill's adopted. Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Good luck in Tax Committee.
Thank you, Representative Jackie and committee members.
Representative Heigerken.
Thank you. And again, thank Ms. Dalton. If there, and I understand we've been working on this for some time, if there's any other clarifications that come from the department that you're aware of, would you let the chairman, Junkie, know that so that we got a heads up on it?
Mr. Chair, representatives, yes, I will do that.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dalton. We appreciate your time. Members, the chair will move House File number 9 to come before us. This is the dairy investment credit bill. It's been around here a number of years. We've already had testimony and hearings on it. However, we do have some folks in the audience. I've lost my sheet now. Here we go. I'd bring up Bob LaFave and Dennis Ritter at this point to add some testimony, additional testimony to the bill. And members, I do have an amendment that I'll offer after we get their testimony here. welcome to the committee. And as we commented before, members, the last time the milk producers were in, there was a bit of a weather problem, and we didn't get them here as quick as we wanted to that day. So we're glad to have you folks back. Introduce yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony regarding House File 9.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bob LaFave. I'm the Executive Director with the Minnesota Milk Producers Association. I have the honor and privilege of working for Minnesota's dairy farmers. And while we may have been a little late, Mr. Chair, at least we did bring some milk for everyone who was in attendance, so hopefully that helped. We're here today, I'll make my comments brief. We're here today just to speak, obviously, in support of House File 9. Most importantly, we want to thank the members of this committee that have been here in the past for their support for the bill over the last several years. It's your support that's allowed us to get as far as we have with this. We certainly do appreciate that support, and we again ask for your support this year. I think everyone here knows how this is important to sustain our dairy industry. We've been in decline, unfortunately, for a number of years, and we're at the point where we are beginning to rebuild, and House File 9, the Dairy Investment Tax Credit, is a crucial piece in helping that happen for a number of reasons. First and foremost, it does provide a financial incentive for dairy producers that are looking at modernizing their facilities to remain competitive in the future. And secondly, it also sends a message from state leaders, state elected leaders, that yes, dairy producers, we do care about you. We do want you to stay, and we do want you to be a part of our rural communities for years to come. And that point cannot be understated, the importance of that. As you guys know, you talk to dairy producers, they don't always feel like they're really being appreciated, and this would send that psychological lift, if you will, to dairy producers. The bill is good for dairy farmers. It's good for our rural communities, and it's good for the state of Minnesota. We ask for your support again. I'll turn it over to one of my directors from Stearns County, dairy producer Dennis Ritter.
Mr. Ritter, who's your representative?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Heygerken.
Thank you.
And Mr. Sambo.
Introduce for the tape and please provide testimony.
I am Dennis Ritter, Mr. Chair, from Niles, Minnesota, dairy farmer. Been on the Stearns County Dairy Advisory Committee for 10 years. I'm also a board member of Minnesota Milk Producers. I am fortunate to live in the heart of central Minnesota, which is very heavy in dairy, which you all know, but there's other parts of the state of power, like Stearns County, but not quite as big. But the big thing for me as a dairy farmer is this bill is for all size farmers. It's not just large versus small. It's for everybody. We have one great infrastructure in central Minnesota right now, and I give the example of veterinarians, lumber yards, financial, you name it, we've had it. It's important this bill, anyone mentioned, can help us maintain this infrastructure. It's also good for the state of Minnesota. We have four large processors right now in the state of Minnesota competing for our milk. Plain good for dairy, period. And also, not only dairy, it also goes into when we sell our bull calves, they go back into beef lots or whatever it might be. So anything to help us dairy farmers in the state of Minnesota would be great. And I guess that's my only comments here. Other than that, I was out to western Minnesota with the Department of Agriculture last spring to expand a feedlot out there. We met with the people in the Wheaton area. And it's amazing when you get up the western part of the state, when you do not have animal agriculture, when you see dirt up to the fire halls, no curbs in town. And I made that comment at the meeting, you can see you don't have animal agriculture. You're compared to, you get the Melrose, I'd like to see a street in Melrose or Sox Center or Pooport that isn't cemented up to their buildings or curb or whatever. So definitely animal agriculture plays a huge role in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ritter. Any questions for the witnesses? Thank you for taking the time to come in on this. Members, we have an amendment that I would offer at this time, the A1 amendment, 9A1 amendment. Members, what this does is does not at all subtract from the Dairy Investment Tax Credit, which has a fiscal note of $4.8 million and is included in the governor's budget at $4.8 million. But rather what it does is add another $1 million to this bill and brings in basically a program for other livestock also. And we have some other livestock folks around today. We think it's a good idea with the Dairy Investment Tax Credit, and I guess we'd like to Also try it out on, we have poultry and swine. I know Representative Hamilton understands that one, and sheep and llamas, as we learned today, and all sorts of other livestock that's trying to come into compliance with feedlot rules or expand their operations. So without subtracting from the dairy credit, we're actually going to try and add over in the tax committee some other livestock. Again, $1 million. It's set up a little smaller, so it goes, that money goes a little further, and you can see that it's only on the first 100,000 as opposed to the first 500,000 in the dairy. But I think it'll give us a good feel if we can enact this, what kind of interest there is actually in other livestock, and then if we see that money used up rapidly, and once it's gone, it's gone. This is first come, first serve. And then we can review it next year or 2 years from now, next budget year, and understand if it was being used or not, or if that pot of money is still there. We know there probably isn't the interest we thought for other livestock. So any questions to that amendment, members? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Amendment is adopted. To the bill. Any other questions to the bill? Anyone in the audience want to testify for or against House File Number 9 as amended? Seeing none, members, I renew my motion that House File 9 as amended be recommended to pass, referred to the Committee on Finance with recommendation to go to taxes. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Bill is adopted. We're looking for Representative Demmer. I think we went to get him. So, see, he will hopefully be here shortly. This is the point we need that Jeopardy music playing in the background, so Demmer can hear it when he walks in. He was over in room 10, members, not too far away, so hopefully he's on his way. And we'll just wait. Representative Heigerken.
I just...
to help fill the gap.
A little introduction, folks. Representative Doty is very involved in this as well. And Representative Marquardt as well. We've got a couple pieces of legislation going. Last night, Representative Bob Greiland and I proposed the education budget to the Ways and Means. And one of our provisions was the debt equalization that we talked about, and it's really very, very, Upsala is probably the best example of the situation that's happening. There's two pieces that we're pushing for at the legislature as far as property tax relief goes for rural Minnesota. Representative Demmer has the first piece here that Representative Marquardt feels is also very, very important. He'll be proposing that first piece, and then there's a second piece that, Representative Welty just got up, and we kind of put it in his hands. We've been meeting with him, and Representative Greiling just formed another committee where I'm not sure who's all on. I know I'm on it. It's a real coalition of people on both sides of the aisle addressing some of the issues with farm property and debt equalization. So this is something that may come up, Representative Junkie, in this committee in the future as well. But I'm going to let Representative Demmer talk about the specifics of his bill, and he understands it better than I do.
Representative Demmer, please approach the patiently waiting committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Heigerken moves House File 101 and recommends that it pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance with recommendation to go to taxes. Representative Demmer, your bill is before the committee, and welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for waiting for me. I appreciate that. I was filling my mind full of tax things in the tax committee. We're going through property reports from the Department of Revenue on property classifications and rationales in their report, and I have things coming all over the place, Mr. Chair, and I...
Representative Demmer, we've been talking taxes all day today, too.
Talking taxes. Well, House File 101, members, I believe most everybody's had a chance to see this. The basic premise is we're taking the farm building site and making that the portion of the ag tax base for an individual property owner that for the purpose of school capital debt levies. Right now, for a broader picture, for operating referendums for school districts, we exclude ag land except for house garage 1 acre. House garage 1 acre is the ag land tax base that we use for operating levies for school districts. For school capital debt levies, which are the type of levies we use for improved buildings, new schools, that sort of things that the voters vote on, we still include the entire, all the ag land, all the improvements, which are the buildings and that sort of thing, and the house garage 1 acre. What my bill would do is remove the bare ag land, keep house garage 1 acre and improvements as part of the tax base for purpose of capital debt levies. And the concept here, again, is keep the building site as the basis. So that's the overall idea, Mr. Chair and members. And I guess at this point, I think we do have some folks here from Farm Bureau, Farmers Union. They support this sort of thing. I did not ask them, Mr. Chair, to specifically testify. Unless there are questions, I think Mr. Radish might be here and some of the others. But anyway, I guess I'll stand for questions and discussion. This is a great topic and something I think is important for us to look at.
Through the bill, members, any questions for Representative Demmer? Through the bill. This might be real easy, Representative Demmer. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against the bill? It's your lucky day.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I could, there are issues that you and I have discussed and I've discussed with various members that we are looking at, and I just want you to all be aware of, and probably it's a bigger issue when we get to the tax committee, and that has to do with what this bill actually does, and it primarily does want two things. We're not changing the amount of taxation. We're changing who pays it, Mr. Chair, as you know. And basically, this would amount to a shift to residentials and to commercial industrial properties. The other thing that it does do by lowering the property tax base, it does kick in additional debt equalization aid. Representative Welty could talk to you at great length about that topic. And we're looking at that also in conjunction with this. The idea is that as we get more capital debt equalization, which is basically property tax relief from the state going to the locals, we will see a moderation and hopefully, depending on what we end up doing with debt equalization, in some cases the elimination of that shift. So, Mr. Chair, I don't know if that helps or might pose some questions. But
Representative Demmer, before you came in, Representative Heigerken was commenting on the Education Finance Committee's views, too, and I think one of their priorities, frankly, will be to try and adjust the property values that we haven't done since 2001 when we set them, and that's the Upsala problem and others. A lot of rural districts are losing debt equalization because their property values are going up and we're not adjusting the way we should. So, you know, I think what this committee is saying, and I think what you're saying, is we need to get all of these things over in a tax committee, have a discussion, and hopefully some of them survive at the end and bring some relief out there. I don't know which one's going to be. That's your job over there to pick and choose, but we're hopeful some of the farm and agriculture relief does survive and becomes part of Representative Marquardt's property tax relief package. Any questions, members?
Mr. Chair, again, if I can, it's about relief. It's also about fairness and redistribution. And, of course, fairness is different in the eyes of the beholders. The debt equalizing factor that you're talking about is something that we do need to make adjustments to. Representative Welty's bill addresses that specifically. We'll be looking at that. The other thing in terms of that factor, Mr. Chair, if I could, it's property values going up. There's another component that's also causing that same problem, and that is declining enrollment. As we have higher property values and fewer students, that dollar property value per student goes up, and that goes against the grain and actually is counterintuitive to what debt equalization is supposed to be about, which is ability to pay. So we're working on those things, and I think you know, whether it looks exactly like House 101 looks exactly like this at the end of the day, whether debt equalization looks like it does at the end of the day, we don't know. But and we're also crossing over between education and property tax and tax committee. So it's going to be an interesting next number of weeks.
Well, rural members on the education committee just fix the busing problem, I'd be happy. Representative Heigerken and others. Members, Representative Heigerken renews his...
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Schmanz.
May I ask one more question?
You may.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Demmer, in explaining the format of the bill, you said in the... In an operating levy situation, the appraised value, the property value would be based on the house, garage, and 1 acre. And in your bill, it would be based on the house, or in essence, the building site with all the improvements. Will that require the assessor's office to keep a separate record in regards to a building bond referendum?
Representative Demmer.
It's a great question, Representative Szymanski. I asked the very same question myself. I was very happy to learn that the assessors in the counties already have that data. We don't have it reported at the state level. Right now, they're, in broad generality, from what I understand, there's house, garage, 1 acre valuation, there's improvements valuation, and then there's the ag land valuation. Today, the improvements, which is your building site, your barns, your building sheds, your sheds, your barns, your grain site, grain setup, those valuations are kept separately, but they're blended in with the ag land for purposes of reporting to the state right now. So the raw data is out at the county levels, but they've never reported it separately, so that'll be the difference. But the answer to your question is they don't have to go out and reassess what the buildings are all worth. That's already done, which I was very happy to hear.
Okay. Any other questions, members? Representative Heigerken renews his motion that House File 101 be recommended to pass. We refer to the Committee on Finance with the recommendation to go to taxes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Bill passes. Thank you, Representative Demmer, for bringing that through our committee. Members, a couple announcements before we move on here. In the audience, you see some folks sitting up here with blue shirts and tags and other things on. They are participants in the Red River Valley Emerging Leadership Program, sponsored by the U of M Extension Service, and they represent 17 counties from northwest and west central Minnesota, and we welcome you to the Agriculture Committee today. And we also have someone from the Finance or Department of Revenue here too now, so we welcome you. We're sorry we didn't get you here earlier. It was kind of fun. We could have put you right up there with Miss Dalton. You'd had an, you could have drawn pictures with her today, but we're glad you were here. And members, if there is any specific, some of you had some questions earlier for Finance or for Revenue, and they are here. If you have questions, we can bring her up. I don't see any at this point in time. Members, we're only about 10 minutes left, I guess, with Mr. Martin sitting there. You don't mind the break in the day to listen to this enthusiastic conversation, and we can bring you back another day. Is that all right with you? Or you think you can do it in 10 minutes? All right, let's give him a shot. Members, Mr. Martin is coming up for a little overview of the Clean Water Legacy portion of the Department of Agriculture's bill. So, Mr. Martin, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Joe Martin. I serve as Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Brief overview of the budget item for Clean Water Legacy Act.
Do you know where we're at in our budget book?
I couldn't tell you.
I'm sure our fiscal staff is right on that. Please proceed. He'll let us know where we're at if we don't find it in the meantime.
Simply put, we're at $2.25 million per fiscal year in the budget.
Excuse me.
Page 44, Mr. Chairman, is the Clean Water Legacy item on the Department of Ag.
Page 44 in your budget books. It's a change item, members. Okay.
Basically, this number was arrived at. There was a series of meetings that we held over the summer and the fall between the agencies. The main players in this are all the agencies: MPCA, Bowser, DNR, Public Facility Authority. We sat down basically trying to, where do we go with Clean Water Legacy? What's the role for each agency? What is the funding needed? So when you look at this $2.25 million figure, it really isn't a standalone figure. It's part of the package of all the agencies, because each agency has it in their change item. Some of you may, who sit on other committees, may hear from the other agencies on this, but I think if you see it comes up, it's really sort of a package. Last year it went forward as a package. So basically we're at $2.25 million. Very simply, the roles that the agencies play in this is MPCA does the monitoring work out there in the waters, and they put together the TMDL plans when an impaired water is found. Bowser is basically in charge of the restoration work. DNR has a small role in sampling, and what MDA's role is basically what I'll lay out. I'll talk a little bit about what we've done with last year, going into what the new funds would be used for. The biggest component is the Ag BMP loan program. The funds you see here, it's important that this is funds on top of what we send out in base funding to basically all the counties and Ag BMP loans. Last year we were appropriated $1.2 million, which basically led to 8 projects that we put out covering 12 counties. And these are loans that basically go to local units of government that are partnered with their local lenders to do conservation projects.
Mr. Martin, are those loans run through RFA, or where does the handling of that money?
It is a partnership through the Public Facilities Authority.
PFA.
Yes.
Okay.
So where we're slated at is $1.25 million for the new budget. Once again, these loans are basically, we sit down as an interagency review team between Bowser, PCA, and DNR, and we're saying, where does an Ag BMP loan can match up with Bowser or SWCD cost share, where we try to package projects when local units send in requests. The important thing is these loans only go to watersheds that have completed TMDL plans. So that's where they're directed into. So a plan needs to be done before the additional loans would be awarded.
And Mr. Martin, these loans are paid back, is that correct? Are they no interest, low interest?
I believe they are low interest, and they're in a revolving loan fund and are paid back.
And to maybe the fiscal staff, Mr. Reinholz, I've had a question on this, and before we put our bill together, members, it appears we're taking PFA money and bring it over to the Department of Agriculture, and then it's set up in a revolving loan fund, low interest, and the money's paid back. It sounds mighty familiar to the RFA funds that we run now. So the question I've had, and I wonder, is why are we grabbing money from Clean Water Legacy to bring over here when we could simply let bonds on our own, similar to the RFA, and then just include this authority within theirs, and then preserve that PFA money for other projects across the board. I'm trying to understand why we're hauling PFA money over here when we really have the RFA authority, and by adding statutory language, I would assume we could include that in our RFA monies, that we just moved that bill out of here, if you remember yesterday, members, for $50 million. And Mr. Reinholz, I don't know if you have a comment on that now, but it's something I'd like you to consider as we move along and try and understand that situation in particular, unless you have a comment on it, or we can all get our heads together later on it. Mr. Reinholz?
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, this piece of dollars being proposed, the $1.25 million, is general fund dollars. It's not the PFA dollars. There are PFA dollars that go over to the Ag Department to be used.
Okay.
PFA is not one of my accounts, but I believe that part of the reason for that is the PFA has federal dollars also, so some activities they are able to utilize federal dollars at the Department of Ag, but is one piece of it, but I don't know all the pieces. Okay. I can find that out.
Well, if you could check on the PFA money, and then the same argument, members, becomes when we looked at the RFA, you can either do cash, which apparently this is, it's a chunk of cash that came over, or you can do bonding authority, which doesn't count against our bonding debt, which doesn't take a supermajority, which is paid back, and, you know, to me, rather than using the cash, I tend to agree that we maybe should go the bonding route with this. So that's a question I would have that I think we need to rectify. I'm not arguing. I think the money is needed and the loan program is essential, but just arguing or questioning how we go about funding. So And we can talk about that further, Mr. Martin, as we move into the actual budget document here in about a month.
And we'd be more than happy to get you some supplemental information on what part is PFA and general fund. And
a little bit on the research and your two new FTEs, and then we'll let you get out of here.
Sure. Last year we received $800,000 for research projects. We're slated in the budget for another $800,000. Basically, the role of research, the vision that we have is there's a lot of scientific work that needs to be done when it comes to assembling TMDL plans. When you're trying to say X percent of sediments coming from Y, there's a lot of work that needs to be done on that. We've contracted on 4 research projects with the University of Minnesota researchers from last year. Basically, we see that whether that type of research needs to continue or identify new research priorities. We'll work on that. We have an ad hoc group together that we have some. We're going to have some further discussions on that if that appropriation comes through.
And Mr. Martin, typically research projects are multi-year ventures. Is that the case with this? You said you had $800,000 the year prior. You're continuing a lot of those projects, I assume, in the next year or two.
The ones that we've contracted in with the original $800,000 will run a few years on $800,000. So we're not.
Okay, so
haven't made
new.
Any commitments.
This is for new research.
This would be new, yes.
Okay.
I think that.
Hang on here. Let me go to a couple of questions. Wealthy is first. Represent Wealthy.
Thank you. And Mr. Martin, right?
Yes.
You mentioned before that over $1 million went out for 8 projects to 8 local units of government. And I'm just wondering, are these dollars really being leveraged? And are we getting more bang for the dollar out of it than just a few projects in those areas? Because if I look at that and think 8 units of government throughout the state, we have a long way to go, and this is going to be a very expensive endeavor. And I know there are dollars out there in environment budgets, and other agencies have the dollars, but for the Department of Agriculture and what you're using the dollars for, how much leverage are we getting out of the money that we're spending?
Smart.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wealthy, the goal in awarding any of these loans is we're always looking to leverage. Part of the process is we set up a review team that when these local units of government have to apply, we send out the RFP for the projects that they want to do, and they'll make a request for an Ag BNP loan. The criteria that we'll look for in that interagency process is what are they leveraging? Can they leverage some SWCD cost share? Could they potentially be leveraging some federal dollars? So I'll get you on more details on the 8 projects that I think would display some of that leveraging work.
Representative Wealthy, are you done?
Well, just a quick follow-up, and then my point will be made, and that is I'm not just talking about leveraging dollars. I'm also talking about leveraging volunteer resources and other resources to put people out in the field to actually be implementing projects that are going to reduce the sediment or the nutrient runoff. And so I would just like to see that our dollars are being used very efficiently. Thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Martin, I just want to walk through Clean Water Legacy a little bit. That I think the G16 said they needed about $80 million a year. Is that correct?
Mr. Martin?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I believe that is the figure that was recommended by the G16.
Representative Hansen.
And then last year, the governor appropriated and the legislature approved, or recommended and the legislature approved, $25 million in one-time money. Is that correct?
Mr. Martin?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I believe that is correct.
And this year, the governor's recommendation is $20 million. That's a $5 million reduction from the one-time money last year. Is that correct?
Smart.
Mr. Chair, members, that is correct.
So when we look at $800,000 additional for research, and we've got a smaller allocation than last year, I could see $800,000 put a lot of projects in the ground, actually out in the field. I think we have to prioritize where the money goes. And at this point, I'd like to see the money going in the ground rather than studying the problem more. So I know that the agencies all get together, cut up the $20 million. Everybody's got to get their piece of the pie. But if we're going to be funding Clean Water Legacy at a quarter of what's needed, then we probably should do some triage in terms of where that money should go. And I believe the University of Minnesota is the research entity in the state, not the state agencies. So I just wanted to get my concerns on the record about that.
Thank you. Mr. Martin, two FTEs being added, is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. We added no FTEs from the appropriation last year. The need that we're seeing is basically the scientific in the scientific area of interacting with MPCA staff. What we hear from the production ag community out there is when TMDL plans are being developed, things are highly technical. They're looking at monitoring data. They're looking at what the load allocations are. So basically, we're looking at adding two staff that would basically manage some of the research projects with the university staff, but also look at, say, the monitoring data, look at what the correct models to run in certain watersheds may be, and then prescription of best management practices or conservation practices to make sure that the plans are good. So.
Very good. Any questions, members? Next week, Tuesday, AURI will be here with samples, with product samples. Don't be late. Meeting is adjourned.